It is 13 minutes before 5 o'clock. The memberships have been sold. The handshaking and baby kissing are almost over, at least for now, for Stephen Harper, Belinda Stronach, and Tony Clement. In just a few minutes, we will go live to the Metro Convention Center in Toronto for coverage of their final speeches to the faithful. Tomorrow, during a four-hour window, almost a quarter of a million Conservatives are eligible to vote for the first leader of the new Conservative Party of Canada. John Osler is a former Progressive Conservative, and Jeremy Hexham is a former Canadian Alliance member. Both have been popping in for a chat every couple of weeks through the leadership campaign. Jeremy is with me here in the studio in Calgary, and we've caught up with John, where he's wrapping up a ski vacation in Aspen, Colorado. Hi, you two.
Hi, Jeff.
Hi, Jeff.
So, John, this must be preferable to the smoky back rooms of politics.
Well, I have to say it's pretty good, but I have missed a good political fix, so I'm interested to hear what Jeremy has to tell me about the campaign.
Well, the problem, let me tell you, Jeremy wants to tell us about a little problem with the campaign. So where and when, sir, do you have to cast your ballot?
I get to cast my ballot tomorrow morning from 8 in the morning till 12 noon, and that's it. Now, for a person who doesn't get out of bed on Saturdays as late as possible, that means I'm going to have to get up rather early. If you're in BC, it's 7 to 11, I think, that 7 in the morning to 11 that you get to vote, and it's that same period across the country, apparently so that they can have the results by 7 o'clock tomorrow evening, Ontario time, Toronto time, for the announcement on television.
So, John, is 4 hours enough time to allow for voting?
Well, I have two responses to that. It's not enough time for me. I'm a card-carrying member who arranged his vacation plans to come back early on Saturday, like about 11:30, so I could vote, and apparently I can't. And I guess my other comment is it's important, I guess, that the results are announced in the center of Canada, but I'm not certain who at the end of March break in Ontario is really going to be tuning on to their television at 7 o'clock on a Saturday night, but that's just my opinion.
Well, you know, John, this means I'm going to vote for Stephen since you can't vote now.
Oh, I see. You figure you'll cancel that out.
Yeah, cancel out his vote.
Well, I've got a few hours. I may find a way to vote anyway.
Well, I'll tell you, I know you're an experienced traveler, but getting from the Calgary airport at 11 to your polling station in Calgary West, I think is your riding, that in an hour is going to be tricky. And it is really odd that the voting, they'll close them up and lock them up at 12 noon, and that's it. I'm wondering about the strategy at the party level that dreamed this up. What are they thinking, Jeremy?
I think they're thinking that they want to have the center of the known universe for Canada, Toronto, so people don't have to up late. But I've been contacted by several people who I know who can't vote because, like John, he's away on vacation. But what about the people who have the McWalmart-type jobs? there are a lot of party members who are paying high taxes who have two or three jobs, and they're supporting this party for this reason, that it's supposed to look after them, the party members, and they can't do that because some of them have to be at work at 8:30, and they by the time they leave the house, it's 7:45, they won't get a chance to vote.
But John, does it make sense to make it as convenient as possible for people in Ontario? Because I understand that Ontario will have about a third of the available points, to go to any one of these candidates. So does it make sense to sort of make it as telegenic and as convenient as possible for Ontario voters?
Well, you have to remember that there's an element of the Conservative Party that represents a view that the West is alienated, and so I suppose bending over backwards to favor Ontario isn't going to play well with a lot of people. No, so I don't think that was the strategy. I'm not sure what the strategy is, other than having a result for prime time on Saturday in Ontario, and I happen to think it's a mistake for the reasons Jeremy just identified.
Is this, at the same time, though, going into this thing, is this not pretty much a slam dunk for Stephen Harper? Jeremy?
Well, I don't know. It might be. But on the other hand, one person I spoke to told me that they weren't supporting Harper for this very reason, because they figured it was Harper and the former leader of the PC party who came up with this idea. And they came up with the rules, and the people are blaming Harper on this one, saying this isn't fair.
So it might have cost him a vote or two.
I think it
now,
might have.
That said, John, I got to tell you, you've been away, but there have been some polls coming out. They certainly seem to show that Harper's going into this with a strong possibility of a first vote win. Would that be a good thing or a bad thing for this party?
Well, I think it's probably not a good thing, because what this party really needs is to kick off with something completely new. And for, you know, as we've done this show, I've been speaking favorably about Belinda Stronach on the basis that she is completely new and can stand in the middle and bring, you know, the two factions that this party is, the party has to admit that it has, together. And I don't have a lot of confidence that Stephen Harper will be able to do that.
Jeremy, is there a disconnect here between electing the best leader for this party, given its own issues, and electing the best leader who could become prime minister? I mean, is there one candidate you'd pick as leader of the party and another candidate you'd pick as a prime minister?
Yeah, I think there would. I mean, I've spoken very highly of Tony Clement, and I do like Tony. I think he'd make a great leader of the party. I'm not so sure he'd make a great prime minister. And I think that's where Stephen Harper does have some advantages over Tony, is that he's got the experience, he knows policy, and he can do I think he can do things that Tony can't do, and I think he's got a little more maturity.
He also speaks French.
He also speaks French.
Which, if you're going to be electable as a prime minister in this country...
I mean, look at the last debate. I mean, he spoke... 98% of it literally in French, and you had to have it translated, which, for those of us who don't speak French, like myself, I found it rather annoying. I would have liked Stephen to have mentioned more things in English. But, I mean, he was really reaching out to the Quebec voters and Canadians as a whole to say, look, I'm the only candidate who speaks fluent French. Uh-huh. I'm doing a great job this way.
But what about all those Canadians who are going to see a Stephen Harper victory, which I do think is likely, as confirming that all this merger really was a takeover by a party that can't win east of Manitoba of another party that can.
And that's an excellent point that you bring up, John. And it's something Stephen Harper is going to have to work on. It's something I think all three of them are going to have to work on together, along with all the candidates and the elected MPs that we have right now, to say that, look, Stephen won as the best candidate, and we just have to reach out to these different groups and show that it's not a takeover. And I think Stephen will put in a cabinet that is made up of both parties, and will try and be as fair as he possibly can.
Have you been interested, guys, in watching who's been serving on the different campaign teams? Because what's interesting here, I was looking for what I thought would be a fairly schismatic campaign between those supported by previous Progressive Conservatives and those supported by previous Canadian Alliance adherents. And instead, you got Rod Love working for Belinda Stronach, you got John Lashinger, you know, you got all
these... You got Art Hanger working for Tony Clement.
Art Hanger working for Tony Clement, which is a real...
And know. Art Hanger was one of Stephen Harper's most vocal and loyal supporters in the last campaign.
So let me ask you this. Has it been a divisive or a unifying campaign, John?
Well, all leadership campaigns are divisive. You know, I don't think you can find one that isn't. And it's going to be a huge job for the winner of this to bring the two factions together. And I think it's a huge job because I think Stephen Harper will win. And he's got his work cut out for him because there's a lot of former conservatives who are going to say, this is exactly why we shouldn't have supported this merger.
And I agree there, too. But I also think it's interesting to note who is supporting. I mean, I discovered to my shock the other day that a very good friend of mine is actually supporting Stephen Harper, and this is a person who refused to join the party in the last leadership because Stephen Harper was the running and for the Canadian Alliance. And I think it's just interesting going to the different camps and seeing the people who are there and who's supporting who, and I'm finding it... I mean, I suspected certain people would be supporting certain candidates and at certain parties, and the different people are there who I never expected to see.
John, who ran the best campaign?
I think the best campaign was probably run by Belinda Stronach's team, because here's a person from or a campaign that came from nowhere. It's certainly not involved with the political process, and is solidly in second place, and I suppose has an outside chance of winning. Tony Clement and Stephen Harper are old political pros. They know what they're doing. So, you know, they ran good campaigns. But to be in second place in that crowd for somebody who's new to politics is pretty impressive.
Did they keep their candidate, though, Jeremy, inside too much of a bubble? She was very rehearsed.
And that's the one reason I cannot support her, is that she was too bubbled. She didn't come out. She didn't make a lot of free appearances to places. I mean, at least Tony Clement came to Calgary. And, I mean, there was a bit of a mix-up with dates because Stephen Harper had an event the exact same night. But at least they came out and they spoke to people. The only time Belinda was in Calgary, you had to pay, $25 to go hear her. And she didn't make any other speech. Everything has been rehearsed and to the line. And I don't like that because I have not seen Belinda. I have seen what what the political pundits want me to see of Belinda, but I have not seen Belinda.
So who do you think ran the best campaign? Or would you agree with John that Stronach did best campaign?
Stronach ran the best campaign by far. I mean, she got the media coverage. Yeah. I really thought that Tony Clement and Stephen Harper could have used other methods to get to people like me, more grassroots activity, coming out to Calgary more often, doing things, more phone calls, more personal stuff, and better emails. And I mean, Harper had the best website of the lot. Tony Clement's website came out a little late and didn't look that great, and it had great potential to inform people about what was actually going on.
So, John, you figure it'll be Harper on Sunday as the leader of the new... What about you, Jeremy?
I think it'll be Harper as well.
Yeah,
on first ballot.
Oh, first ballot?
Yep.
What about you, Jeremy, sort of saying, I'm not sure I'm going to go with that.
John's probably right. But, I mean, I would really like to see a second ballot and have a little fun with this campaign. But I would be quite surprised I'd be very surprised if it goes to a second ballot.
Guys, I want to say thanks to both of you for providing our eyes on the campaign as it unfolded. I know it was quite a commitment on your part, too. Thanks to you both.
Thanks, Jeff.
Enjoyed it.
That's John Osler. He's on the phone from Colorado. He's a former progressive conservative. Jeremy Hexham with me here in the studio, former member of the Canadian Alliance.